This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the W12 podcast. We are on season 3, episode 10. I'm Ben Platt and we are going to try and see if we can pick through what's going on at the moment down at Loftus Road. We are also joined by QPR's current technical director and head of coaching, I believe, Chris Ramsey. He's going to be joining us in the next sort of 10 minutes. Before then, we're going to chat through the Coventry loss and a few other bits and bobs. We're joined by ever-present Duncan McCready. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. A bit disappointed with current form and how we're dropping like a stone. But apart from that, I'm all right.
Start on a positive. And we've got Jack Supple. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. Thank you.
Welcome back.
Yeah, always a pleasure to be on, and wish it was under more positive circumstances, but, you know, we'll try and find the positives if we can.
Yes. Okay, so let's get into it. Coventry, watch the game. Disappointed. It went exactly how I thought it would. I've got to be honest, that's what the prediction was. That Gokiera, is that right? Was going to grab a couple of goals. He was going to terrorise our defence. And we weren't going to, playing a team with, what is it, 7 clean sheets and 9, something like that. It was always going to be difficult to create chances. And that seemed to be the way of the game, really. I didn't really think we were in the game at any point. I thought Coventry controlled the game. I mean, I know that we had a lot of possession in the second half, but I don't think we did anything really of any notice. We didn't really, I mean, Dickie's effort was probably the only real chance, I'd say, really. We weren't the keeper. I don't remember another one. A couple of half chances here and there. But am I right in thinking that this break has come at probably the best time?
I think so. I feel like if we'd had another couple of games and this run of form continued, I genuinely think then Beale was going to be in a very, very sticky situation. Because all the bad forms come since he turned down the Wolves job. And he's like, oh, I want to stay. I've told the players I'm all in. I want them to be all in. And since he said that, it looks like nobody's been all in. Like, since the Cardiff game, when it was all up in the air, our performances have been poor. The results have been terrible. And there just seems to be something not going right. And it just feels like QPR all over again. Like every time we think we've got a manager who's taking us somewhere, like it just something just goes wrong somewhere behind the scenes or whatever, something goes wrong and it all starts to crumble away. And that's what's happening again.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's on, you know, squarely on Bill's shoulders at this point. And I know it's quite interesting that since he turned down the Wolves job, only Bristol City have won fewer points than QPR in the Championship. I mean, that's just a coincidence, I think. But like, what is concerning is the form, as you rightly point out, Duncan. Lost 4 of our last 5, which is as many as we'd lost in Bill's first 16 league games. We failed to score in 4 of the last 5. with just one goal, which again is as many times as we failed to score in Bill's first 16 league games. You know, we've lost our last two home league games. That's after we'd only lost once in the first eight at Loftus Road under Bill. So things are slipping. But what he's saying, you know, let's take stock of where we are. If you'd offered our position before the start of the season, there is a semblance of truth in that. I think 31 points in 21 games with the injuries we've had. And that is, you know, that's been a major problem this season. And there's wider questions for that, I feel, with maybe like the back room, the medical, why are we getting so many injuries? But you know, as Ben points out, one shot on target away to Coventry, people, the fans, 3,600 fans going up there to see that, rightly disappointed. And I, you know, again, looking at some other stuff, are QPR better suit to being the away team or, you know, playing on the counter attack? I found it interesting in the eight games when QPR have had less possession, we haven't lost. We've won six and drawn twice when we've had less possession. All of our defeats this season have come when we've had more of the ball. So there's definitely things to work on. We've got to be a bit more cutting if we're going to have more of the ball.
I think that comes from, and I've said this a few times, that, you know, when we had these big away wins at the start of the season, you know, the Watford, Sheffield United, you know, we'd had some really positive away performances. But since we've been top, so Birmingham, for example, was and Luton, we were the team to beat, if you like, weren't we? We were top two, and we just didn't deal with that very well. We haven't dealt with that very well. So teams have come to Loftus Road, knowing that we're a good side, sitting back, hitting us on the counter, getting a set piece, and relying on the fact that the stats will tell you that we don't create much when the opposition do that, we struggle to score.
Yeah, and again, I agree. I think when we're on the front foot, so to speak, and we're having all these shots, they're not good shots. Like the Huddersfield game, 36 shots. It was the most by a losing team, like it's the most by a championship team that lost since 2019, Leeds against Wigan. I mean, that we had six shots on target out of 36. Now, it was a very frustrating night. So we've got to do more about giving our players better, you know, chances in the box, better crosses. Like, it was very frustrating the last few games when we get out wide and we put it in the box, but it doesn't get past the first man and it's just aimless. Sometimes a striker's not making the, you know, the best movements. There's all little things that go well, you know, they're not a problem when we're playing well. Everyone seems to be, you know, doing that. But like, as soon as things go bad, or we have, you know, a shot to the, you know, to the face, we don't seem to deal with adversity too well. And I think you're right. The mentality is definitely a, is it an issue when we got to top and we were the team to beat? We didn't deal with it, as you say. And that's interesting.
I think that goes back to the whole like Warburton season as well, doesn't it? We just didn't handle the pressure of ever being favourites or being tipped for promotion. Like, we just seemed to crumble under that pressure. We're better as the underdogs.
I feel like
when we've been doing well with Beale, everyone's like, oh, like, is he going to be the manager to get him back up? Is he going to be the one to get him into the playoffs? And I said, like, do our players just not handle the pressure because they're not used to it? Like, I don't know. It really frustrates me that we seem to be in good positions in the league, have a loss, and rather than bouncing back, we'll lose the next two or three or drop points in the next three games. Like, it's so frustrating as a fan.
Yeah, we're quite a streaky. We're very streaky.
You're right. Like, we seem to crumble quickly. We have a couple of losses, and I don't know what happens, but it's a mentality thing. It must be because we just seem to not be able to get it. And actually, it's bigger than Beale, this, because this is an issue that's been going on for years. Every manager just goes on these mad 7-8 game losses. Like, I remember Holloway went on two in about 3 months. Warburton's been on it. McLaren was on a mad one as well. I can remember that one. That was like 9 games. It's just... I don't know. It just feels like this.
Where does the buck lie? Like, where does it? Like, who do we try and aim our frustration at? Is it the manager's fault? Is it the player's fault? Is it the board's lack of ambition's fault? Like, or is it a combination of all of those things?
I get frustrated with, I said it last week, but I get frustrated with the comment around we got the fifth or sixth budget. Like, I was hoping Beale wouldn't use that. I hate when Warburton used to use it every other week, right? And I get it. We get it. We know, right? We've had it. We literally know. It's at every fans forum we ever go to. It's at every time Lee Hu speaks, Les speaks. We know we've got the fifth or sixth smallest budget league. We know that, right? But that doesn't mean anything, really, because it doesn't mean what your playing staff quality is like over the years that you've built up that low, you know, what the value is now, because it's like I've said, I'm not going to go through that, but you know, we've got some excellent championship players there, right? That warrant being in the top six, right? And also that mentality just drives through the team, in my opinion. And they, rather than us thinking we deserve to be up there and we should be up there and we should be beating teams, we should, I don't know, that always bugs me, Jack.
Do you feel like because of that, there's like when we do get up in the upper echelons of the championship that the players thinking, oh God, we're a bit above our stations here. You know, do you think that's an issue? Like,
probably not directly, probably not the reason, but I don't think it helps when you're 1-0, 2-0 down, you're on a losing five or six in a row, and you know, you've got players injured and you do you know what I mean? And things aren't going right. I just don't think it helps. Yeah, it's frustrating, really. But there's a positive spin on this, and that is that, and Beal said it, and he's right, that we're seventh in the league. Had we done this a different way, i.e. we'd have been on the reverse of this run and been in a good form now rather than... we'd all be sitting here thinking that we'd have taken seventh. So it's not the end of the world, definitely not, but, you know...
Well, that's right. I mean, 31 points from 21 games. Since we've been back in the championship post the 2014-15 Premier League season, we've only bettered that at this stage in one season before points total. And that was last season. We had 35 points. So we are trending upwards overall in the wider picture, but it's just frustrating when you see how good we can be, injuries or not. Like, even, you know, we can be really good. It's just we're not consistent. But do you feel that the reason Bill was kept, you know, he stayed, so to speak, is because he was promised something in January, some reinforcements, and maybe we're going to have a bit of a clear out if we have any takers for those middle of the road players in the squad?
You know what, Jack? I've had this weird feeling the last week. I've been thinking about it, and it's been like bothering me a little bit to why he would reject the job.
Yeah.
Right. And what I mean by that is that, you know, what championship manager would not go to a Premier League job? I get the timing, and it might just be the timing, but for me, it just feels like there's more to it. And I don't know what that is, but like, you know, Nathan Jones was never going to turn down the Southampton job, was he? Like, no. He loves Luton, loyalty there. He's left them already, but he was never going to turn that down. And if any other manager had been offered that Wolves job in that league, do you think they would have turned it down?
So, I feel like something's been agreed maybe behind the scenes. Maybe there is room in the... We don't know. We're always told there's not really much transfer budget, but surely there's something agreed, you know.
There's no loyalty in football, is there? I don't think, anyway. Like, there's no, like... And we all thought he was going anyway, right? So it's not like the fans would have held it against him. I don't think... I mean, we would have been annoyed initially, but, like, you know, reality is he's going to Wolves, who are a massive football club in the Premier League, who have got, like, you know... facilities and everything, next level. You're right, Jack. It was my point. I was thinking that all week. It's a bit odd that he rejected it, if that makes sense, as well as we're all happy.
I mean, I'm glad he's staying. He's clearly a fantastic football mind. And, you know, we appear to be quite lucky to have someone of that, you know, coaching ability. But, yeah, it's his first real big test, isn't it, this sort of little sticky run of form. So we'll see how we come out of the other side. I mean, statistically, November's our worst month in our league history for points per game. So, you know, we never do well in November generally, other than last year when we were unbeaten. But no, we're not very good at, you know, this part of the year. And then worryingly, looking ahead to December, we've only won one of our last 15 games in December. So we've got, you know, some big tests coming down the line. So let's see how we do. It's Burnley, isn't it, when we come back?
Yeah, it's a nice, easy game.
Nice, easy game to get into.
Pressed it away. They probably couldn't get any harder, I don't think. Jack, you must get depressed getting these stats out, mate, when you're reading them. You must be like, because...
It was worse always... McLaren. And sometimes under Holloway, I'm not going to lie. But generally under Warburton and, you know, Eze, Bright and people like that. And then the players have had, like, Willock and Chair. There is some good stuff. I mean, there's a great one on Chair that I found earlier. So in... You know, there's that stat in Europe's big five leagues. You know, you've got Premier League, Serie A, Bundesliga, Liga, and, you know, La Liga. So there's this new one. I've looked it up. So in the top two divisions in each of those countries, Chair has created the most chances than any other player in Europe in those 10 leagues.
Yes, so, but the problem is no one else in those 10 leagues has Lyndon Dykes up front.
He's not as bad.
I don't have that, mate.
Right, how many times has Chair assisted Dykes? Because we had this when we had them on when we interviewed them both, and they hadn't done it then. So it's only going to be a couple of times.
I think it's the other way around. I think Dykes assisted Chair more than Chair assisted Dykes.
And that's the when you're making that many chances, that's the worry, is that there's no one actually to put them away.
That's what I'm saying. He's an asset. And I actually, the reason why QPR stuck banging their heads against the wall in this sort of position where we're trying to get in the playoffs, we choke and we don't get there, is because we need to sell another player desperately to reinvest, give them some more freedom in the transfer market. Because until we do that, I know we want Bill's like, I want to keep Chair, I want to keep Willock. I get it. But we need these players to stand out statistically, because that's how a lot of people are scouted now these days as well. That we need his numbers to be exceptional. And he's got great numbers this year. It could be better if our striker was a bit more prolific, you're right. But he's someone that we need to cash in on soon, because we need that money.
All I'm saying is, do you think Easy would have got the move he got if he'd had Dykes up top rather than Naki Wells? Because I think that's the difference. I think if we had somebody like that with that and footballing intelligence of Naki Wells, I think Chair would be getting even more assists.
I think you made a good point about the strikers and their movements. I've noticed this for a while now. Like, we haven't had a box finish, because Naki Wells wasn't the most prolific finisher. He's very frustrating, actually, as well. But his movement was excellent, and he would make the right runs. Dykes would always make the right runs, which is a little bit, that's one of his downfalls, But Eze, he had some really good players around him. I know Hugo was a bit Dykes-esque in his sort of, his play, but he still got 15 goals that season. Dykes hasn't got to that time. So he did have good players around him, but Eze was exceptional. You can't take that away, in my opinion. I think he would have stood out anyway.
Yeah, he would have. I think he was just a little bit cut above the Chair. Not to say Chair can't reach those levels, but a Chair is in his mind, he's ahead of everyone on the football pitch, I think. It's definitely the strikers. Like, he's thinking before doing things, and that's why I think sometimes he holds on the ball too much, is because someone's not making a run that he wants them to make, or isn't playing the 1-2 that they want them to do. Maybe I do think there's an element of it, he wants to do too much sometimes. I still do get that. But anyway, on Lyndon Dykes, I just think I've got nothing against Lyndon Dykes, but I just think that if he's your sole striker, you're in trouble, because he's not going to score you 15. I don't think he might scrape 15, but he's not going to he's not going to score you 20 goals. I just think we need someone. I'd have happily taken Andre Gray back. I thought his movement was excellent. We can pick this up after, but we're joined by Craig, the QPR technical director. Is that right? Your head of coaching as well?
That's my two roles.
How are you, Chris? You okay?
Yeah, all good. All good, really. Yeah, all good. Just enjoying it.
Thanks for coming on. I guess what's it in your current two roles? What is sort of your day-to-day sort of roles and responsibilities?
I come in the morning, and if I'll watch or participate in first team training.
Right.
So that'll be the beginning. But before that, I'll go in the academy and have a meeting with the academy manager Alex Carroll, and just see what's been going on, what we need to do that day, what meetings we got. Then we go and talk with Mick and the first team staff and see what if they need me or if there's anything I need to do for them. Then I'll pop into Les's office and see what's going on with the loan players or anything else that needs talking out. And then I'll go out to training in the morning. Do the training either with the first team or with the under 21s or with the under 18s. So it can be anything.
Do you have an office? I don't remember seeing it on any of the videos.
I share an office with Alex in the academy, and then I hop desk around the club. That's it.
What are your views then on the start of the season for us so far? Obviously, we're on a bit of a slump, but overall, seventh, you take that at the start of the season. But what are your views?
Yeah, I think you would take that at the start of the season. So we have to look at it positively. for what it is, really. We would have taken that. I mean, obviously, I think that probably, you know, one win in the last few games would have been a magnificent place to be, because we'd be above the line. But we've been playing well, and, you know, we just haven't been able to find the net ourselves, which always causes pressure when the other teams are having two shots and being successful, you know. So all in all, I think the season's been very positive.
What, when you speak to Beal, how involved are you with sort of decision making within, because obviously you take coaching, so does he come to you for advice weekly, or how does that work?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't take the sessions. Mick takes the sessions.
Oh, right, okay.
We'll take part of the session. So what he does is he works in units. So we'll take part of the sessions. But Mick's a very strong personality, but he's very inclusive as well. So I think he asks most people, you know, their opinion on things. He's very inclusive, but he has got a very strong notion of what he wants, and everybody's on board, and it's good that everybody's is on board, and we're going in the same direction. Now, obviously, when a new manager comes in, it's always going to be, you know, a bit of time before everybody gets on the same path. But I think he's done really well the first 4 months or so of his work to bring the club together. There's a lot of integration around the club, and I wouldn't say he asked my advice, but, you know, I would more try to ask his advice on what he wants, some more to speak.
So with Beal coming in, and obviously we hear so much about how much, you know, he's well respected within the game for his coaching. And have you seen that since he's come in? Has there been, I know you've touched on the changes, but has there been big changes in the way and the style of the coaching first team players?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's got their own way of working.
Yeah.
But he's got a distinctive way of working, and he carries it out, you know, he sticks to it. So ultimately, from the point of view that we've had to adapt fairly quickly to the way that he wants things done, and he's ongoing as well. He's always looking for excellence all the time. So I think everybody's on their toes at the moment.
No, I bet. You can ask a question, Doug.
I was going to say, did you have any role in Mick Beal's interview process, or like in the making the shortlist for manager candidates? Did you have any kind of input in any of that side of it?
Not really. I think the shortlist came was quite rapid because of the way that the process was done quite meticulously, and it almost picked itself, so to speak. The candidates almost picked itself. And then, obviously, when you hear the candidates, you're always going to throw your two pennies worth in, as regards the type of manager, the type of style of play, the type of integration that a manager likes. You're always going to have your two pennies worth to put in. But you know, I can't claim him.
You didn't find him.
Yeah.
Because all the QPR fans, they come out. Probably no one knew who he was, but then everyone knew him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember him 5 years ago. Now I can't claim.
Can I ask Chris, actually, what's Beal like in terms of? He said about integrating inclusivity. What's he like integrating the youth players with first team training? Is he quite receptive with that?
Very, very good. Very, very good. We've had maybe 12 players go over this season. And whenever there's an opportunity to do it, he does it. You know, so that was one of the remits for him, was to try to integrate the club. And he's stuck to the plan. He stuck to what he said he was going to do.
Are there any youngsters that are like getting close to being involved in any kind of like first team squads?
Obviously, we you know, I would have to say that we haven't got a lot of strength in depth waiting. We haven't got 12 players waiting to come into the squad, but there are one or two that he's integrated into training, and they've held their own. So, you know, recently Alex Ahora trained with the first team, and he did quite well. And I think Mick, you know, gave him a lot of compliments. Obviously Sinclair's come in. He's raw. He needs training. That's why he's in and out. And then we had Arkell Boyd, who I think is a little way away from actually making a squad, but he's trained, at least he's sampled what it's like to train with the first team. So we've been very, very pleased with the way that he's integrated the players in the team and the staff as well.
Just quickly I just want to touch on the new training complex, which is soon to be built. That must soon make your job much easier. Or what is the biggest benefits that we'll see once that's all complete? Is it next year?
Well, I mean, at the moment, there's still obviously we're using the old building still, so it's a bit makeshift. So I think when you go into a new shiny building, people, you know, have a different view of the whole coming into work thing. But I think the fact that we're all on the same site now, because we were at Hardington before, and we were at Hardington before and we were on two sites, so it was always difficult, especially for me, because I was driving from one to the other and communications was always blurred or late, so to speak. But I think the new... Have you been up there? Have you been there?
Not yet, no.
Not yet.
But we're planned to in the next couple of... I think it's next month, is it, Doug? We're going up there. Yeah, so we're looking forward
Hopefully,
to that.
Yeah,
you'll be so shocked, so surprised at how good it is. And, you know, we've had quite a few people help on it. Alex Carroll has helped Jason Tan to, you know, footballise the plans as well. And you'll be very, very surprised when you get there.
We're looking forward to it. I mean, it must be a big improvement.
Yeah, nice. Exactly. It's true.
Obviously, touching on that, we've had players previously really slate all the equipment we've had and obviously the training pitches and everything previously. Like, in your role, how does that kind of affect everything? Like, is it like hard having players like senior pros come in? Like, I think it was Joe Barton's come out before, hasn't he, and said that the training ground was awful and stuff. Like, is that hard when players do that and say that?
I think it's very hard when people do that, because ultimately you know what the training ground's like when you come, don't you? Yeah. So, you know, you come for a reason, don't you? And a lot of the time people come because they're getting a good contract. So to me, grass is grass. You know, at the end of the day, you have to go out and train. So I think it is hard when people do that, because a lot of the times it's an excuse for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's not saying that Joey was making an excuse. I'm just saying any player that complains about the training ground after they've signed, you know, they got to realise that it's not going to change just because you've signed, you know.
I mean, obviously, with the new training ground and, you know, sort of a manager that's willing to, you know, promote youngsters, does, from the outside looking in, and with the actual choices some players have made, there seems to be more of a pathway for youngsters now. It's more of a clear, this is what you can do in X amount of time. I just wondered, in your role, like how do you help prepare some of these players? I know it's quite a broad question, but like, what sort of is it, like you need to go out on loan, or is it individual coaching? Like, how do you sort of help prepare them when they are close to the first team?
Well, I think what happens if they're close to the first team, then you have to take guidance from the first team manager, because every manager plays their own style. So we have a development program under the manager that comes in, because unfortunately managers change every 1.1 year. So yeah, it's just the statistics. I hope Mick isn't going to be that statistic, but they change 1.1 year. So what you have to do is give all the players a rounded program so they can adapt to any manager that comes in. So the team or the players closest to the first team, we have to try and mimic some of the stuff that Mick does, so that when they go there, they're not a deer in the headlights.
And I mean, someone like Sinclair Armstrong, obviously, you know, physically really impressive. But as you say, there is a rawness to his game, which obviously can be like polished up. What sort of things do we do to sort of help a Sinclair Armstrong? Is it more first team exposure? Is it go away, go out on loan? What's the sort of plan for someone like Sinclair?
Well, Sinclair went on loan last year, so I wouldn't say we ticked that box, but it was a good experience for him. We felt that after his first loan that we didn't send him out straight away, because his hold-up play wasn't as good as we would have liked it, so we stayed and trained him. And then he went on loan and did well. And then now he's stepped up another level, and you know, he's finding it difficult with the dark arts of the first team football. He's almost too honest for his own good. So trying to get the balance between training him and him being needed to make a cameo roles at times for the first team is a task that we need to get on with.
Absolutely. I mean, he's really encouraging, like just seeing him through. He's been quite a bright spark this season. I mean, looking at players that do have potential when they come going further back, you know, in the age groups, like a bit younger, how do we sort of fight away the teams that want to come in and sort of poach players from a younger age? Do we have much that we can do in the current EPP rules, or is it quite a losing battle?
Losing battle.
Yeah.
It is a losing battle because, listen, what is a difficult thing for people to understand is, I don't know if you've been seeing some of these documentaries on TV, you know, these clubs and that. People go for the badge. So it doesn't matter if we have 10 academy players playing in the team. You know, I say to the parents a lot of times, we do workshops on managing expectations of players because of the statistics are so damning. So what we're trying to say to them, if your son has got to just come and enjoy the football. He can't be defined as a footballer from the age of 9 all the way to the, you know, to age of 16. So what happens is regardless what happens, if we offer a player a contract at 16 and he doesn't want to take it because a bigger badge has come, then they have to pay compensation. The compensation's gone up recently, but, you know, it's generally around about 250 grand really for an under 16 that's been there all the way through. So we're fighting a losing battle based on the parental expectations. It's not, we could have the best program in the country. And, you know, and to be honest with you, you know, there was a period where we were getting a lot of players in and around the team, but parents still will go to other clubs that have no record in getting players in team just because they're in the Premier League. So if you look at it now, there's six clubs in London in the Premier League, and then you've got Watford and Fulham that keep flip-flopping. So technically, we'll be seventh or eighth choice, along with Luton and Millwall. Now, that isn't to say that we haven't got, our program's not as good as theirs. It just means that they will just go for the bad so that they've got bragging rights in the pub with their mates, or they wrongly believe if you're a Cat 1 club that your coaching's better, which we all know is a load of nonsense. So we are fighting a losing battle, and it's if next season we were to get promoted and Watford was to stay in the Championship, we would all of a sudden be attracting players that we're not attracting now.
Obviously, is that why we sorry, just quick, is that why we have changed, not changed, but we're looking to find those rough diamonds that are a bit older, sort of, you know, 19, 20. So by the time we've got rid of the rough, you know, and smoothed them out, they're already sort of 21, 22 in the first team and can't be poached as easily.
I mean, the thing is, once they get onto that professional contract where they are professionals, then it goes to a tribunal and it's just whatever people offer. But when they're kids, there's a EPP set amount of money that
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
That they have to pay, which is annoying, really, because you can have a kid from the age of 9 all the way to 16, then he leaves for, you know, 250 grand to a Premier League club. What's that? It's nothing.
Chris, has there been a player that's happened? Is there like a noticeable player that we've lost, maybe, that or you've lost, that has gone on to do great things that we had, or that possibly?
Most of them done. Most of them haven't. We've sold quite a few over the last few years, and most of them have not gone there, because when you go to a Premier League club, you are just one of a chain of players that they buy. So £250,000. Don't forget, they get merit money at the end of the season, which they're not expecting. They can, you know, so which is millions. And when you've got players in their first team that are on that type of money a week, they're not worried about paying that for, you know, a 16-year-old.
Obviously, you spoke about how parents kind of encourage their children to go to bigger clubs. How do you deal with it when you actually are the ones like letting players go? Like, are you involved in that process of it when you've had like kids through like the age groups and then you've got to let them go? Like, how is it dealing with parents who might be getting a bit frustrated that you've not keeping their son on?
It's the most difficult part of the job, because in the same way as I'm saying about people at 16 and 9 and they leave at 16, sometimes you have a player that's been there since he was 9 and you're releasing him at 20. Yeah. So, you know, he's technically institutionalized, really, because he doesn't really know anything else apart from coming to the training ground for you know, most of his life. That's probably the most difficult part of the session, but of doing this role. Most of the time, we have to make sure that we're honest. We're honest with the players, because some of them can go somewhere else and get a job, but also they have to make sure that there's other parts of life. You know, being a footballer, yeah, that's your dream, but most people don't make it. You know, when you think about it, it's 1% of 1% are in academies. That's not a lot. And then you think about it's a 0.012% in 1.5 million get contracts. That's 180 contracts for 1.5 million people. That is, I wouldn't say it's impossible to make it, but it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. Obviously, just going on that, out of all the players you've been involved with and you've coached, who for you had the most natural ability and has made it? And obviously, and on the other side of it, who's had to work the hardest to get to being a pro?
Ooh. What, at QPR or at Tottenham?
Either.
I wouldn't say, I don't like the word natural, if I'm being honest. I mean, obviously, but I would say if you look at someone like Ryan Mason at Tottenham, he was very, very gifted. I think Eze's been one of them. He's been very, very gifted, which people would
call... Did you know Ebre Eze was going to... Did you know he was going to... Like, when you saw him play, did you know he was going to be that big, go that... Do you know what I mean? Like... You must know sometimes, you've got that feeling.
It's all about pathways, though, because there's other players that I think that have been very, very good and they've not had the pathway. So it's all about pathways when you look at it. You know, there's players, someone who's worked very, very hard, who's not a natural footballer, someone like Ryan Fredericks. He plays at Bournemouth. We had him at Tottenham. You know, he wasn't as technically gifted as some of the other players, but he worked very hard to get where he was. So it's not always the obvious players that people talk about. Sometimes it's when you've worked with a lot of gifted players, it's hard to choose one it's going to be, because most people will say, well, you worked with Harry Kane, what was he like? You know, and when people say, yeah, well, I knew at 12 he was going to be a... That's wrong. That's wrong for people to say that, because there's lots of gifted players that fall by the wayside at the last hurdle.
Well, I was going to ask you, why do you think Eze got released by so many clubs being built up to QPR? So I know the ins and outs of why, but like, why do you think someone like Eze potentially was going to fall by the wayside?
Because of style of play. So if you go to Millwall, to be fair to Millwall, people chastised them for losing him, but they done him a favour. Because if he'd stayed at Millwall, he wouldn't have played for Millwall, because they play a certain style of football that's expected to play. that respected the way they play, and he wouldn't have made it. We played a certain style of football in the development group through Paul Hall, myself, Andy MP, Paul Furlong, Micah Hyde. We've all bought into the style of play that we want to how we want to develop the players. And it was right for Eze. It was right for Ilias. It was right for Ryan Manning. You know, it was right for those players. So I think the environment always has a big part to play in where people succeed.
Chris, you must be delighted with Ilias Chair and obviously off to the World Cup now and his development. And he's, to me, from the outside, he seems like he's someone who's worked really hard at his game to try and he's obviously got the ability, but with his size and stuff, I guess sometimes he's developed a lot over the last couple of years. Have you worked with him a lot on his game, and have you been close to him and that development?
I mean, when he first came in, you know, he's a small player, and you know, people tend to write them off straight away. So in our development sessions, you know, we design practices where we give him the ball. We gave him the ball a lot, allowed him to fail, and increased his fitness. And allowed him to stay out of the battle, so he's he doesn't have to tackle as much. So gave him strategies in how to overcome the physical side of the game. And as we can see now, he's still strong. He's a strong little player, very fit, and technically very really good.
Like he seems to know how to ride a tackle. Like he always seems like, is that something you guys have worked with him? Like
we call it block and roll. Block and roll. So he's the way that he clips the ball over their someone's foot, you know, when they come in to tackle him, he seems to jump over. That's something that we do in the academy.
He looks really fit this year. Like, I feel like he's fitter this year, and he's playing every game, and it's quite incredible to see.
And listen, and he's a really good guy. He's a really good guy. He's really, you know, into his community work as well.
Obviously, you've been around QPR for a while now.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you've seen quite a lot. You've seen a lot of changes and a lot of things happen. What's your, like, best memory? And then on the other flip of it, what's your worst memory of your time at the club?
I would have to say, it's going to sound cheesy. My best memories are when players make their debuts. For me, that's the most satisfying, because there's a team effort within the club, within the physios and the sports scientists and the coaches and through the academy. So my best memories of that, you know, we had, I think we had won a game a couple of years ago. It was against Birmingham. And I think there was like six or seven academy players playing, you know, so that's their memories for me, because I know the hard work that goes on behind the scenes. You know, obviously, you know, for me, difficult times when I was the manager. I wouldn't say that I disliked it, but you know, it's when the team's on a downward slide, and then you've got to get rid of a lot of players and you're rebuilding. It's unforgiving in the first team environment, and you know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to hold on to the job long enough to turn it round. And I wouldn't say it was a regret. It was just a part of my development that I've gone through that's put me in good stead for the role that I'm doing now.
Had you wanted to make the step up, into management?
Did I want to do it?
Yeah. Or you naturally just wanted to kind of stay as the role you're at now, or you wanted to progress further on and up the ladder?
No, I think I did want to do that, because I think when you've started from the bottom and you've worked in football in the community, women's football, disabled football, you know, just to name a few, you do look to the heady heights of being a first team manager. But I am a coach. I'll coach anyone's in front of me. So whether they be a first team player or an under nine, I'll coach them. But I think for your deathbed, you have to do certain things that you don't want to have regrets. When you leave the game, you don't. Oh, I should have took that opportunity, and who's to say that I might not take another opportunity in time to come?
Well, that was exactly going to be my follow up, Chris. I was going to say, do you still have a burning desire to maybe be a number one elsewhere or QPR, or you know, in the future?
I don't think I'll be a number one at QPR. which is one of the reasons why I've never put myself forward when there's been an interim manager situation again. I would never put myself forward for that. I would always work in a more of a supportive role because I see myself as a career QPR person from that point of view. But at some stage, I may decide that I want to be a number one again and go through it. But I've actually got the best job in football, if I'm being honest. So it would take a lot for me to leave this job voluntarily because as a coach, when you can work with everybody in the club and work with good people like the new manager and the coaching staff that I've got, it's a very enjoyable place to come into work every day.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask. I mean, you've been working with Les Ferdinand for donkey's years now. How has your professional relationship with him developed over the years? And as you say, you must be quite close and get on with him.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked for a decade now or more. 2010, when I was at Tottenham. So we've worked quite well together. It is a mutual respect there. You know, obviously, he's my boss. So for me, my job really is to support the processes that he's put into place to make sure that if he's successful, then the club is successful. So our relationship's been really good, because he's a coach as well. But, you know, he's got his pro license and he's got everything like that. So we can talk about coaching as well as the game. And then obviously the type of managers and the type of coaches that we want around the club. So it's been really good. You know, I owe the last 11, 12 years to him, really, because at Tottenham, he was the one who pushed for me to work with himself and Tim Sherwood with the first development squad where we did have your Jake Livermores and Ryan Masons, Ryan Fredericks and Adam Smiths and all those people. And then when we went to the first team as a trio, but it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't have been in that position. And then obviously he hired me at Tottenham, so I owe him big time.
Just one final question from me, actually, and it's more of one that's come in the last sort of 10-15 minutes. Me and the lads were chatting earlier about how QPR develop, how we make that next step up. You know, like where we are at the moment, sort of in and around the playoffs, and Jack made a really good point, which is, and the fans don't want this, but is the next step us selling one of these big assets and cashing in on them for us to be able to spread that money around in the squad to be able to, because we've got great players in certain positions, but you know, sometimes it feels like Ilias Chair and Willick are a step ahead of the strikers maybe, or people around them. But it's more of a footballing question. Do you agree with that?
That's a really good question. It's a really good question. And I would look at clubs in our position. As they always say, everybody's got their price. So I would imagine that, you know, being in our position now, we would love to hold on to the players that we've got in order to mount the charge to try to get to the top. But I'm sure that if the right price came for any of our players, we'd have to seriously consider it. Based on what you've said about actually regenerating and making the squad stronger. But that doesn't mean that you know, we've got a right move sign on them. You know, it doesn't mean we're trying to sell them. It just means that if the right deal came in, I'm sure the club would consider it. And if it was to the benefit of the club, I'm sure that the club would go ahead and do it.
Yeah, and look, you know, you don't know what you're going to spend that money on either, do you? You know, you can spend the money on not good. What do you, for just quickly, I've got another question that's just popped in my head. What's your prediction for us for the season then? What do you think we're going to continue to be up there, top 10, or do you think we're going to push on?
I'm quite optimistic for the season. I think we're in a good place considering, for what we would have accepted at the beginning of the season. I think we're in a good place. I think we're playing a good style of football, which is enjoyable to watch. And prediction, I'd hate to say, we're going to get in the playoffs and get in the final and go up. But I would say that I would predict that we're in the top half of the table. And I would hope that we would make the playoffs.
Obviously, Chris, just a quick one from me. Obviously, we seem to have been struggling a little bit with injuries this year. Like, is there anything like within the club where like you kind of like the sports sciences kind of like look at it and think like, is this happening because the fixtures, there's too many being rammed in together? Like, what's like the club's kind of take on it?
I think we've been quite unfortunate with some of the fixtures, some of the injuries. I think we've been, and I think if you look at a lot of clubs are suffering similar injuries to us. You know, post lockdown, a lot of clubs suffered a lot of hamstring and soft tissue injuries, and I think there's been a legacy of that really. If you think about some of the clubs that when we speak to them, they have four or five players out at a time. So I don't think it's anything special to our club. And, you know, obviously the sports scientists and the medics are always looking for ways for improving the robustness of the players. So I think you're 100% right. We have been unfortunate. And I think that over the last few years, the fixtures have been so rammed together. You know, in years gone by, you probably have 10 midweek fixtures a season. Now you've probably got 10 free weeks during the season. So I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah. Do you also think, obviously, with how the style of football's changed, like it's a lot more physical and a lot quicker, so there's a lot more of these muscular injuries, whereas like 10, 15 years ago, it was kind of more impact injuries, wasn't it? Like players getting to tackles, that's why they would then be out injured, whereas now players could just be running and it just something just goes. Do you think that's just how the game is developing naturally, that we're going to see a lot more of these kind of muscular injuries because it's becoming a quicker game?
I think that's a good point. I think, you know, when I played, it was impact injuries, you know. You know, that's what it was. You know, you get your first one free and then you've got two more left in the locker. I think the game has changed. I think one thing I don't quite buy into is that the game's quicker. I think the game's played in the era that you're in. So in my era, for us, it was quick. So it's just played in the era that you're in. But I do take on board that there are more sort of hamstringy calf type injuries nowadays than they appeared to be in my day, and that might be because people are probably more highly tuned than before. It would be good to do the research on that. It really would.
Chris, thanks for coming on. We've bombarded you with questions there. You enjoy the World Cup? You're going to be watching it. What are your plans for the break? Anything?
I think it's going to be. You know, I think it's going to be really exciting. Obviously, there's a lot of views about the whole thing about where it's being played and all that sort of thing. But and obviously, in our lifetime, it's the first time we've had a break at this time of the year. So. But, you know, from our point of view, I think the break has come at a good time in some respects to get our players back into play. And also, I think with us, with the board members, you know, Amit and Tony and Ruben and Lee Hoos and Les, they can get together and plan some more strategies for how we're going to bring the club forward. So I think it'd be weird, but... But I think it would be enjoyable.
In England with your Christmas tree up, mate, it's going to be a bit strange, isn't it? Anyway, mate, thanks for coming on. Look, you know, enjoy the time off and enjoy the World Cup, and let's hope we can have a good second half of the season.
Listen, thanks a lot. It was an honour to be asked. Oh, thank you very much.
Cheers, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
Oh, Chris is gone. Nice guy, eh? Really, you know, when we get these interviews, we're always a bit, you know, we're not sure how they're going to go, but I thought he came across really well, really top guy. And, you know, he's been at the club now for, what, 6-7 years?
How longer, isn't it?
It's as long as like 12, 13 years.
Is it?
I think so, isn't it?
No, 2014.
If 2010, like 10.
Well, then it's more, then, isn't it?
Is it 10?
10 years.
Maybe. You just made that up.
2014, he came in after we won the playoffs. He came in the season we went back up. Yeah, so nearly 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I found what some of the stuff he was going on about was really interesting, of how they develop the youngsters and the kind of stuff they do with them. Like, where he's mentioned about, obviously, Ilias with how he rides challenges. Like, you can see that he does that. And you could, like, it's really interesting to see that they've actually worked with him and taught him the best ways to get out of those challenges with big physical players.
Yeah, and also I found the Sinclair Armstrong thing a bit quite interesting around how he kind of alluded to the fact that he's struggling in the first team at the moment with how, and with how, I guess he's coming up against these centre-backs that have got 15 years experience week in, week out.
Exactly. Like, giving him like little sneaky shirt pulls or stepping on his heels.
Rotherham home game, I think it was that 37-year-old, where is Richard Wood? Booted Sinclair Armstrong to high heaven, and Armstrong was on the floor, and old Wood was laughing off, and I felt welcome to the men's game. I'm like, there's no way to stop him. You've got to take him out because he's just too quick and too strong, and he's getting his lumps, isn't he?
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, well, top interview, top man, but let's quickly crack on with QPR. I just wanted to touch on Chrissy Willick. And I didn't get your opinions on him. I was watching him on Saturday, watched him midweek before. He doesn't look fit to me. He doesn't look like he is. I didn't see him sprint. And I don't know whether that's something that, not that he's chose to do, but a sort of something that we have to live with. If we're going to bring him in, it's kind of like, look, we need you in. You might not need to sprint here and do that. Just being in the run. I don't know. What do you think?
Do you think if we weren't having the break now, he would have come back for the last couple of games?
I think that would
because
have
been... I feel that he's kind of been brought back knowing, give us 60%, 70%. You've got ability in your locker. Like, but let's just get to the break. You've got 4 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, to really rest, get that hamstring back to being strong and fit. That's what I feel like has happened. Like, I feel like with the form, because I think if we were winning, I don't think he necessarily would have come straight back in as quickly as he has.
I think you're spot on. I think they said, look, what can you give us in this little period before? Because, you know, we need you. But I agree with Ben as well. Like, it just doesn't look as sharp and as expected. He's having some issues with the hamstring. So he's, you know, it's a hard one to get back fully fit, but this break comes at a good time. I think looking at what he was doing before and after this recent injury, like, he's had one shot on target in four games, and he's also hit the woodwork once. He's also set up a goal against Huddersfield. Like, there's flashes of the old Chris Willick, and it is in sporadic bursts, whereas before I felt like he was dominating games, he was running games when he was on form. So I think it's just a fitness thing. I think the other side of the break, I think it'll do the world of good, like a lot of the team. It didn't quite go to plan, did it, putting him back in the team?
And surely, like, we've all played like amateurish level kind of thing. You know, if you're not fully fit, you're not going to quite do the things you normally do. Like, with that mental kind of block, you're thinking, I might just not fully go in for this 50-50, or I could probably make that sprint, but I'm not going to put that whole 100% into it. Like, he seems to be playing with that kind of mental something. He's just kind of hesitating a little bit. There's
I wonder whether that's just natural from someone who's had two big injuries, because he's had two big injuries, right? Whether this natural, that's just like a natural way of someone thinking, I don't know, it's weird, isn't it? I just, like I've said, he just doesn't look 100%. You're right, Jack. It might be that he's still slightly unfit. I think Doug, you're right in the fact that probably his mindset is kind of thinking, well, if I can get to this 4 week break, I've got 4 weeks then to rebuild this hamstring and I can go again. So, but just an observation I noticed on Saturday that he just didn't look like he wasn't sprinting anywhere.
It's always short bursts, isn't it? As you say, it's like very sporadic. I mean, when he came on against Norwich, took the ball on half turn and hit the post, you think, oh, he's back. Damn you. But then anything else did he after that?
No, but and with the ball, when you're running with the ball, I guess, it's you sort of, you can do that, can't you? You can glide past players. You're not going full tilt, are you? But
it's slightly slower movement, isn't it? Like, you're not fully explosive with a ball. Like, whereas when you're chasing after a ball, you have to be like explosive acceleration. Whereas when you're dribbling, it's slightly not as on the hamstring, as it wouldn't be, but putting as much pressure through the hamstring.
Yeah, I heard Andy Sinton on commentary say a few times, when there was a ball pumped over the back into the channel and Willick's got to chase it, I think Sinton remarked, it's not the sort of run you want to be making coming off a hamstring. You kind of
exactly. Really, but and Jack, that's one of the last things I wanted to chat about, was we massively miss someone doing that. Like, you know, the Coventry guy, is it Gokieris? I mean, what a striker he is, by the way. he's everything that we kind of wish Lyndon Dykes was. And I don't mean that in a horrible way as that sounds, but we need someone who can get in behind. We just haven't got anyone who can do that and stretch teams. We Andre Gray was kind of doing that when he last season at times, and he did that a little bit towards the end of last season. And got quite a few, got quite a few goals off the back of that, didn't he?
It's cute and clever movement, isn't it? It's working defenders and putting them in places on the pitch they don't want to be. They don't want to pick him up in that sort of outside. Yeah. He comes in and he comes in off, gets to the back post. So he's definitely, there's definitely been a few strikers over the years that have gone for smaller fees than Bonn and Dykes, and that have, Carlton Morris at, Luton.
It looks good, yeah.
Ocarez at Coventry. There's been a few, but, you wonder if we were...
They're just a bit quicker, aren't they? And that's the thing with Lyndon Dykes. He doesn't have that quick over 10 yards, even that over 10 yards. Remember Shearer, he always used to say to me, I wasn't quick, but over 10 yards, I could beat a lot of defenders. And that's sometimes all you need, isn't it? That quick burst of pace.
I do think Dykes has been better, though. I think...
Yes, I do agree.
I do think his link-up play has been better. I think he's looking a bit more confident. Obviously, the penalty miss was a shame against Birmingham. But I think overall he's looked better. But you made the point just before the interview. I think we can't rely on him. We need more, don't we? We need a striker who can get in behind. We need a bit more than Bond coming on once every five games for 20 minutes or 15 minutes, or Armstrong making a few appearances here and there. We do want to take the pressure off Dykes or to go two up top if we need to in the game.
Just quickly then, before we end, Beal, we've got a four-week break now. What does he need to do? Obviously, getting players back fit is number one, but what do you think he needs to do?
Set piece training.
Yeah.
No, I looked it up. I mean, in this calendar year, QPR are one of three sides to have conceded 20-plus goals by set piece in the championship. And this is excluding penalties, by the way. So this is 20 goals by like corners and free kicks, so to speak. Five of our last eight goals conceded have come by a set piece, whereas only three of our first 16 goals this season came by a set piece. Personnel, is it mentality, organisation? I feel more secure in Jimmy Dunn's in the box, put it that way.
It was strange, wasn't it? Because at the start of the season, you kind of noticed that we were scoring from set pieces, which you don't often do. We weren't conceding from, like you said, but it seems to just be something that's crept back in, like it always does. We just seem to, I don't know, like I feel like we've got quite a big team defensively, especially. Like we shouldn't always be losing headers in the box.
Yeah, it's the second ball which does my head in.
Quite Wolverton, but it's first contact, isn't it? It is a cliche, but in recent weeks, we're not getting our head to the ball first, and you put yourself under so much pressure after that.
We're not even doing second as well, really, are we? We're losing a lot of second balls. That's always an annoyance of mine.
Do you think it's a coincidence our dip in form has also coincided with Steph being out of the team quite a bit?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, like, it's that leadership as well. It's that leadership, isn't it, as well, though? It's
mentality. Like, there's all sorts of comes with him, and we seem to be calmer on the ball to make better decisions with the passing when he plays. And I think this season he's been the Steph of the loan period. You know, when he looked magic, and I know he's got six assists, a couple of goals. He really had a good season. He started 15 times for QPR this season. QPR's win percentage is 53%. When he doesn't start, our win percentage is 17%. So one of six games we've won. So he is key. You're right, Duncan. That's back that one up.
I think as well, because he was really pressing. Like we often would say, like, why is he making that dart and run forward? Like, why is he pressing now? But it seems to unsettle teams. And I don't feel we have that in midfield at the minute.
I think it was Hull. We got two assists in the game. Yeah. Just intercepting the ball, pressing in the middle third, final third almost. And
that's where you want Chilic and Kieran Willock. When that happens, that turnover happens, and the defence is all at six and sevens, that's when they'll do the damage. They won't do it as much when they've got we've got 10 players behind the ball, defending.
And that's something lead. That Amos doesn't give us that when he's been instead of Steph. And I don't think, neither does Dizel. Neither of them two have that kind of really high pressing where they want to get at someone and make them force the error, which is what Steph gives us. So when he's not in the team, you can really see that affects possibly the, like you said, the turnover high up the pitch.
I think Amos is someone that has it in his locker when he's fit. I think it was a real shame his pre-season went the way it did, because he was someone that has been used in the past as someone that can press in midfield, harry, win balls, and, you know, break, you know, make line breaking runs, get in and get the odd goal. I think we've missed that side of Amos because he hasn't looked the same this season.
He hasn't, no. And I thought you were going to praise him a lot. I was going to have you there, Jack. But as it is, I'm not going to. I mean, probably one for another pod, but Amos for me, is, I don't know whether it's the system, Beal not being Warburton. So he seems to be going backwards, injuries as well. But anyway, quickly, is there anything in Rangers for Beal? I feel like I keep seeing... Could we be going through this all again in a week or two? It feels like he's going to be going that Van Bronckhorst.
Yeah, he's under pressure.
Do you not think it's like hypocritical if Beal said like he's all in, won't go to Wolves, but then now Rangers want me, I'm going. Sorry, guys, it's been another month, but I've changed my mind.
Right. Possibly, but would he care? How long would it be hypocritical for? Like once he's gone, like, you know, everyone's got to move on.
He got so much praise for turning the Wolves job down, didn't he? Got a lot of like, oh, top, like, you know, this, you know, well done. Good to see there's loyalty in the game. But he has made a lot of noise on social media. You know, it's rightly so. It's his former employees. He had great times there. For how much he loves Rangers, the fans love him. They think he's, you know, a genius, don't they? So it's one that looks, you'd be more scared of than the Wolves. I think you'd be more tempted to go there.
Yeah, Europe and everything as well.
But maybe our recent run might put them off. You don't know.
Maybe. All right. Well, let's see how this goes. I'm a bit tense about it, but we'll maybe pick this up in the next pod. But lads, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure as always.
Enjoy the World Cup. Let's enjoy the break of Saturday afternoons not being ruined, which seems to be the in thing at the moment for QPR.
No, we'll just watch Southgate's boring England instead, yeah?
Yes, we'll do that. What is it? 8 defenders? Nah. All right, cool. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Remember to subscribe. And we'll see you in a few weeks. You ours.
You ours.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.